Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back. And today we have the chairman of the Board of Governors of the Orthodox Union, Mr. Mark, of course we know him as Moshe Bain, a Jewish activist, a thinker, philosopher, a very successful attorney, and a really all-around wonderful Jewish person and a good friend. Moshe, how are you?
Thank God. Wonderful. Good to speak to you, Steve.
Always my pleasure. Now we're going to talk about this wonderful journal that you're very much involved in called Kolal Perspectives. And I've had the good fortune of, this is actually the third, is this the third edition?
Correct.
Right, okay. So why don't you tell everybody a little bit about the idea behind it, why you decided to get involved in it, the listening audience that you hope to attract, and so on and so forth.
Okay, well, the publication was worked on for about a year before we actually launched it. And it was the product of a group of us who had been involved in a very wide disparity type of involvements in the Jewish community in all kinds of functions and different roles, ranging from pulpit rabbis to Rosh Yeshivas to activists in certain dimensions of the Jewish community, or even writers, which is one of the group that's a core group on the editorial board. And what we discovered was that there were many, many issues confronting the Orthodox community that were not being addressed in an objective and open fashion, either because they were merely being discussed by people with very particular agendas, or they were the types of concepts or issues that were being swept under the rug for fear of raising issues without any resolution, or of concern that people would be attacked if they would even raise the concern as something that had to be addressed. So over the course of about a year, we've began to formulate how we might put together that kind of forum, a forum in which ideas and issues could be raised in a open fashion, but in a respectful fashion. We didn't want to create a dynamic that would be anti-establishment and attacking and critical of the community and be counterproductive, ultimately, but rather be a constructive environment that would be able to address the issues that the community needs to grapple with, but done in a proper and respectful fashion.
Part of the goal, then, to take it to the next level, or is just an awareness? Is that sort of the bat?
I think that we're really in a test form right now. Every issue, the way the journal works, and I hope people who are listening to this program have an opportunity to peruse through it, because it's
just in that regard, could you tell people how they get it? They can get it online, right?
Sure. It's almost exclusively online. It was intended to be exclusively as an online journal, and it's accessible through www.klalperspectives.org, K-L-A-L perspectives.org, and you're able to download either individual articles or the entire issue, and all three issues are now available online. The intent originally was to have it marketed towards those who, I use a phrase, middle market Klal Yisrael management, meaning obviously we're not in a position to be the ultimate decisors. We're not the Gedolei Hador. We're not the poskim of the door. We're not the designated leadership in any way, shape, or form. What we were trying to do is engage in those who are playing the frontline role, the pulpit rabbis, the principals and educators, the community activists, those who are running the organizations, the social organizations, the social needs organizations of the community, etc., and allow them to have this kind of discussion. Whether or not it would be taken to the next level, whether or not there would be resulting discussions and meetings and potentially even implementation within the respective institutions or on a broader basis, we felt would be identified by the participants themselves. So, for example, in the most recent issue, which I'm sure, Steve, you want to talk about, which is the question of connection between the Jew, the Orthodox Jew, and God and the community, or the lack thereof in many instances, unfortunately, we've already received a fair amount of feedback from individuals within respective synagogues and respective schools about, well, we want to have further discussions about how we might implement implement the array of suggestions that were posited by various authors and the like. Whether or not that becomes a formalized fashion, I don't know. We certainly are not looking to become an organization. We're not looking to create a yet another organization in the Jewish community that already has a plethora of competing institutions on almost any of the topics that we're addressing. What we're trying to do is just create a forum in which these discussions could take place and then create, perhaps, once again, another context for future discussions among actual hands-on leaders in the community.
Okay. They're really fantastic. Why don't we just go through the three? How did you pick the topics?
Okay. So the first issue was much more of a symposium than a particular topic. And what we were trying to do was lay the groundwork for further discussion in the future and in future issues. And what we did was we went out to the leadership of the organized community, the main primary leaders of each of the major Orthodox organizations in mainstream Orthodoxy. And then we smattered that with a number of other types of individuals, including the editors of the journal itself. And not everyone accepted to write. There were many people who were invited to write who did not participate, but we were very pleased that many did accept and did participate. And in that first issue, all we were asking was, what do you think the primary challenges are? What do you think the community needs to address? And that was intended to set the table for future discussions. And the understanding from the get-go, as we articulated in the maiden issue, was that every subsequent issue would then pick a particular topic, even though each topic may have many dimensions, but a particular topic, and then each issue would address that particular topic. And that was a source of the first two topics, which we'll talk about, and it will be the source of many of the future topics. Frankly, because of the attention we've received already, we've been receiving suggestions for additional topics that need to be addressed, and many of them will definitely get into the queue and ultimately be addressed as well in future discussions.
So why don't we talk about the second edition, which then picked one topic and really focused in on that topic, right?
Sure. And the second issue, which was the first of the issues that actually addressed a specific topic, was the issue of, and I'm going to use a looser terms than the very finely articulated questions that were the source of much debate and orchestration, but the general topic was, there has to be an acknowledgement that a significant alteration in the sociological makeup of the Orthodox community has occurred, in that today, most married women are working. Whether they're working by virtue of the fact that they would like to, that they want a career for their own fulfillment, or they're working by virtue of the economic demands on the Orthodox family, although not every woman is working, higher and higher percentages of the community are families that are comprised of a woman participating in the economic sustenance of the family. So what we wanted to do was address many dimensions of the implications of that new sociological reality. And therefore, what we did was we went out and invited a variety of types of authors that would address different dimensions of the problem, or not, I'm using the word problem is maybe inappropriate, but there's just the consequences of this new reality. And therefore, we had people ranging from women's educators to pulpit rabbis to rebbetzins to sociologists and psychologists, each writing from their perspective on issues ranging from how does this new reality impact children and how does it impact child rearing? How does it impact women's education? Are we preparing our young women for this new reality? You know, there was a time, perhaps, that young women were told, your role in Avodas Hashem is going to be exclusively being a mother and a wife. Well, in today's reality, that may not consume much of their day. Are we giving them the same kind of background that many men are being given in their chinuch to explain to them, this is the role you're going to play as the breadwinner and sustaining your family? And are we also preparing them with the halachic consequences of women in the workplace and being in the workplace in general, which many argue, you know, we now have to have an issue. Are we preparing men for the challenges of being in the workplace as well? And then we also wanted to talk about, well, how does this new reality alter the dynamic between husband and wife? Does it change? Or is it merely something that is easily placed into an already existing dynamic of husband and wife in an Orthodox marriage. So those were the kinds of topics that we wanted to talk about.
Excellent. I mean, it was an excellent addition. Absolutely, no question about it. And when you ask someone to contribute, do you put any limitations? I mean, from an editorial point of view, of course, you can change things, but generally speaking, when you ask Rabbi X or Person X to send in their article, I mean, is it going to be then reviewed and maybe modified because some of the views may not express some of the views of some of the editorial board?
There are editorial input, but the editorial input is not likely to be that the views do not reflect the editors of Cloud Perspective. I think, in fact, quite to the contrary, what we're looking for is disparate views, and we're looking for everybody who's reading the material to get as many different perspectives as possible. What we do, however, put a lot of emphasis on are two things. Number one is what we try very hard is to ask questions back to the authors when they raise an issue and they fail to consider all the implications of their suggestion. We push back and say, okay, you're saying X, Y, Z. Well, now you have to address the following consequences of that position and try to push them to speak in greater detail, address the issues that are inevitably consequences of their suggestion. So that's one dimension that we spend a lot of time with our authors on. The second dimension, which is maybe you'll call, okay, reflective of an editorial bent more than a substantive bent, and that is that we are very mindful of not being attacking. We don't want the authors to be attacking rabbis, institutions, gedolim, principles that we view as being the fundamental underpinnings of the community. We're very afraid of what goes on generally in the community today, in that much of what's written about issues that we're confronting are written in a fashion that is an attack mode rather than a constructive mode. And therefore, we tell every author before they agree to write that we're looking for constructive ideas. We're not looking for attacking the system. We're looking to improve the system. We're not looking to change the system taking it apart and take it over in a different way. That's not at all. This is intended to be the establishment itself, analyzing itself and improving itself.
And then the third issue, which just came out very recently, getting a lot of big publicity, I see, dealt with really finding spirituality closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, etc., correct?
That's correct. And, you know, this was one of the interesting concerns that was raised by a number of the original symposium contributors. And I was a little surprised, not only by the fact that so many had raised it, either in their articles or verbally in discussions, but the very fact that they were prepared to put it on the table. This is sort of like one of the skeletons in our communal closet that we would like to pretend doesn't exist. I mean, we would like to say that, hey, we have a wonderful community of observant Jews, everyone flourishing in their spiritual growth and reflecting the success of our schools and our synagogues. And here you had individuals who are at the forefront of these very synagogues and institutions who are acknowledging that no, it's a system that we have to abide by, we have to be committed to, but there are cracks that have to be filled, and there are people falling within those cracks, not just in dramatic fashion, but even in subtle fashion, where you have people who are keeping all the mitzvahs, attending minyan three times a day, keeping all of our halachas, and nevertheless feel a vacuum in their religious experience. And what we were trying to do is start a discussion that will reassess, well, you know, we're doing what we should be doing, but are we doing enough? And are the things that we should be adding to our spectrum of observance and focus that would elevate people's spirituality, not just their halachic observance, and not just the amount of Talmud Torah that exists, which seems, at least to the casual observer or those involved, to be extraordinarily successful, but how about what's going inside people's hearts and minds? Are we doing a good enough job at getting into their kishkas and giving them the tochen, the substance, and the guidance to allow them to grow as spiritual beings, as religious people, not just as observant people?
Now, do you think this is something which is new, or do you think that this has always been around. I mean, this issue of spirituality, trying to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mean, I thought, I guess, what happened was for years, as the Orthodox Jewish community kept progressing, and we were getting, greater in numbers and greater in yeshivas and hidurim and so on, people thought that was spirituality. I think people now are coming back and saying, that doesn't guarantee that someone is going to feel this closeness just because perhaps the outer, exterior looks as if it is, but perhaps inside there's not. So, I mean, why do you think personally, this is happening?
Well, I mean, I think that your comment about the historic nature of this challenge was repeated by many, many of the contributors to this issue, and there was repeated reference to even going back to the Nevi'im, the prophets, citing the Jewish people for their failure to focus on spirituality. So there's certainly consensus that this is not a new challenge. It's a challenge that we've had through millennia. I think that in every generation, however, the remedies and the causes of the challenge may be different, and how you approach it and how you try to remedy it and give people fulfillment has to be tailored on a era-by-era basis, because our experiences differ so dramatically. And, one of the original concepts behind this entire enterprise is a recognition that the Orthodox community in America has really gone through a significant evolutionary process. And if you would look back at the mere numbers of Orthodox observant Jews 50 years ago, and look at the numbers today, there has been such a dramatic increase in the number of families, individuals, as well as synagogues and schools that were maturing in a certain sense from a real embryonic community to a much more developed community. Clearly, we have a long way to go to be the fulsome level of observance that we'd like to encompass the entire Jewish community in general, but even within the observant world, the numbers have grown dramatically. So the comparable that I posit is that it's no different than a corporation, an enterprise that starts off as a small entrepreneurial endeavor, and in that context has certain approaches and certain styles and addresses issues in a certain way. Well, a business that grows to a more mature level that doesn't develop new ideas and new approaches and new protocol to this larger enterprise begins to falter. And one of the basic objectives of Klal Perspectives is to acknowledge this development within our community and the demands that this development is calling upon. Now we have to start dealing with issues that, for example, 50 years ago, if a person would choose in early stages of American Orthodoxy to be observant, they were making choices that were so deliberately deviating from what was the norm in the Orthodox community at the time. Even among families that were observant, the next generation was often reducing their observance. And therefore, those who retained a commitment to observance were reflecting an affirmative choice to opt into a system that was a very intense commitment. To find people of that commitment to have a spiritual and religious experience was almost self-evident. You were making tremendous mesiras nefesh. You were extending yourself enormously and sacrificing distinctions from the rest of the world that surrounded you. By contrast, today, Baruch Hashem, we have many, many hundreds, if not thousands, and maybe even tens of thousands of Orthodox families who are bringing up their children with the presumption of Orthodox commitment and observance, and sending their children from the get-go to very religious and focused schooling throughout their childhood and beyond, less of a choice is being made. It's more of an assumption that this is the way you're going to live. And when you're brought up with that assumption, you may find fulfillment, but you may not. You may feel that it's just being imposed on you as a cultural or sociological reality, and you're not getting much of a religious boom out of it. It's not a choice you're making. It's not a meaningful discussion. It's a fait accompli. It's an a priori assumption. Mm-hmm. And with that kind of environment, you're going to have to be very considerate. Okay, am I giving this child, and then adolescent, and then young adult, the meaningful experience in Judaism, not just these are the formulas and styles you need to follow?
Okay, I think it's a really, really good point, and it's a major issue. There's no question, especially as we live in a more open society, which is going to continue to get even more open in the generations to come. You know, we have to think about how we educate our kids. Maybe we have to change some of the educational practices that we have. We have to reexamine, which is why I think, you know, the journal is really so interesting, because it's really tackling the very basic questions that I think almost every person who thinks just a little bit understands. This is exactly where we are, and it's a really welcome thing for the Jewish community. I know it's being accepted very well by all those who have read it, and I know that people I know are commenting on it, so it's great. So let's talk about the future a little bit. So is it going to come out on a regular basis, or, you know, depending on when everyone can get all the articles together, so, you know, that's when it'll come out?
Well, it certainly is not coming out on a designated deadline basis, although we do give authors deadlines for each issue. The aspiration is that it come out every 3 months.
Okay.
Whether we're able to honor that quarterly objective, I'm not sure. I'm certainly confident that for the next year or so, we will come out with at least three, hopefully four more issues, and then beyond. But you know, we're a less than scientific machine that knows when things are going to come in. We you know, hope our authors abide by our deadlines, but there's always slippage and the like. But at this point, the current aspiration certainly is to come out with a quarterly journal, or certainly not less than three times a year, but quarterly in an optimum sense. And how many years and how many issues we continue to pursue will really depend on the reaction we get, whether we see that we're being productive and helpful. And, you know, the benefit we have here is that it's a volunteer basis. We're looking to achieve something for the community, and as long as it's purposeful, we'll continue. And when it peters out, or if it does at any point, then we'll just go on to other projects that we're already all involved in.
Right. Well, listen, there's no shortage of projects, and knowing you, as someone who's a creative mind, I'm sure you're working on 25 other projects at the same time. But listen, thank you so much on behalf of the Jewish community, because I think I would really recommend to everybody, Kalal Perspectives, if you really want to read something interesting, intellectual, it'll make you think. A great, by the way, great articles to talk about on Shabbos, around the Shabbos table. Excellent, especially if you have teenage kids. Absolutely fantastic. So, Maish, thank you so much for once again contributing to Kalal Yisrael, and we look forward to reading more articles and more journals as Kalal Perspectives. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Steve. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.